You know, something was occurring to me over the weekend, and I thought, what the heck are we doing as citizens of this magnificent country? We are paying a guy who is going to sabotage us by visiting people in Iran. This is like the head of the Defense Force. Now, when I had the dubious privilege of serving my national service, I remember the head of the Defense Force was like a king in the world. And so now we've got a head of the Defense Force who says he doesn't care what the politicians say. He doesn't care that there are many people who are going to be unemployed because the Americans are putting tariffs onto us. He's just going to go and make it worse. And off he goes to Iran and makes statements which are only going to add to the unemployment queues. And it kind of makes me wonder if Pitt LaRue and the guys at Saka Liha haven't actually been right all along by saying, just state-proof yourself, because these guys are fools, they're idiots, they are going to make your lives worse if you continue to give them the power that you do. And so it's good to be talking with you, Pitt, because I know that's the approach that you've taken at Saka Liha, but you've also now tried to get some of the laws or dumb laws off the books by fighting in the courts. And you had a particularly good success recently in the Pretoria High Court. We can talk about that in a moment. Let's just go back to this thing of those that we empower, because we do. And often as citizens, we don't join the dot. But we've empowered that head of the Defense Force. We've empowered the politicians who make these crazy laws. We've empowered Ramaphosa to send an envoy to America who can't even get in there because he is his company. He's a chairman of a company that's being sued in America for killing American soldiers, MTN, and the work that they did with Iran. And he's also made some pretty, scurrilous, he's made some hectic accusations against their president. So clearly it isn't the right guy to go and negotiate for you. But we empower these people. Hey, man, maybe we should be sobering up in South Africa.
Yeah, Alec, there are serious problems with the South African order. The order is not conducive to human flourishing, to the flourishing of the various communities and millions of people in this country. I recently had a look at some of our statements of a few years ago. Shortly after I joined Saka Liha in 2017, President Cyril Ramaphosa, he was then still deputy president, was elected to at the ANC's 54th elective conference. To head the party and subsequently become the president. And I had a look at our statement at the time, and our statement said that while his victory does buy time and is in a sense, of course, a variation on his predecessor, Mr. Zuma, it doesn't fundamentally alter the course, the trajectory of the country. And I think that is something that if we seek to not be perpetually disappointed in the leadership that emerges from the political structure of this country, then we must start to work with the reality that something's amiss in the structure of the order, and we keep producing leadership in a central government that makes foolish decisions and acts not for the common good. And it's not unique that I say this. Other people have said this, but that's where the term state-proofing comes from. It tries not to focus too much on whoever the person is that's currently in charge of whatever is part of the government, but realizing that something needs to change in the balance of forces in society itself. And that's where Saka Liha comes in, and many other organizations in civil society are doing good work by building authority outside of the state, and that is where a good balance of forces is to come from. Let me add one more point to this. We also, part of our litigation strategy as regard for local government reform, and we've been litigating in Lichtenberg, Ditsobotla, that's a collapsed municipality in Northwest, for quite a while now. And just 2 weeks ago, in the same day or just after, we had a negotiation, a discussion in front of a judge on the timelines for the progress of that case. The MEC for the province for cooperative governance and traditional affairs in the province went on national television and made a televised plea that national government should intervene because the municipality has collapsed. And there was a very instructive statement he made. He said, that they are not going to disband the municipal council and call for new elections at the local level, because new elections and the Sobotla will not result in a new outcome. And there's no use in trying more and more elections. The municipality will stay collapsed. That was the MEC in the province. So I think there's a realization across the country that something's amiss in the structure of how we think about governance in this country. There has to be change in the next decade in a very serious way in this country.
If it wasn't a family show, and we know young people listen to this as well, I'd say, what the F? But I can say, what the heck? And perhaps it's time for South Africans to start saying, what the heck? And not just about the ANC, and Dit Sobotla is a very good example. In fact, we've got a vested interest in the BizNews tribe because one of the stocks in our portfolio is Afrimat, and Afrimat has got the cement plant in Dit Sobotla or in Lichtenburg. So, and we get feedback from Andries van Heerden, the CEO there, about what a parlous state that town is. But the point you make is very good. But not just that. You were accused by John Steenhuisen, who is supposedly the other side of the fence, the guy who should be giving us solutions, as being a purveyor of baseless sensationalism. Now, have you buried the hatchet with the fellow?
As much as Mr. Steenhuisen was offsides on that one and remains offsides. Again, he's the leader of a particular party, but our beef is not trying to identify various individuals and their shortcomings in any of the leadership of the parties. We're trying to stick to the problems and address them. In Mr. Steenhuisen's case, he still has the, in our way, unfortunately, dubious track record right now of not having reversed any of his predecessors' policies. Any of his predecessors, BE policies, transformation policies, BE funds, and so on. And he's been in the seat almost a year, just in his portfolio, which was where we had taken an issue with him. And we kept reminding him that we had warned his predecessor that she should reverse some of her policies. He's not done so. In fact, he's signed under exact copies of her policies so far. And so there's a problem there with Mr. Steenhuisen, and we'll circle back to that once other pressing matters have made time for that. Our focus is to try and stay on the ball, and I hope Mr. Steenhuisen starts urgent reforms in his department, not just in the fundamental way. There's a fundamental policy problem in his department, and that we'll know that he's reversing that when he starts reversing some of his predecessors' policies.
Let's get on to the matter at hand, which is your High Court case in the Pretoria High Court, where you won it, and it could be a watershed in the fight against BEE policies, which everybody in the world, including The Economist, says are a form of legalized theft for the elite. And The Economist last week, in one of their leaders — it's not often South Africa gets into The Economist's, one of their five leaders that they bring out every week — and it was there, and it said, "Mr. Ramaphosa, what made you rich is making your country poor." Just about everybody seems to understand that, but you having to go to the courts to force through or reverse certain legislation. Now, I know there were a lot of estate agents here in the area that I live in who have been celebrating your progress, because it's also something for them, which is existential, the BEE laws, because estate agencies are often one- or two-man bands. And if they're unable to practice being a one- or two-man band without giving away 30 or 40 or 50% of their business, depending on how big the turnover is, well, clearly for them, they'll have to find something else to do. So just unpack this court case for us, why you did it and what it means.
Yeah, we had in a very important victory in court about over a week ago. It was against the Air Services Licensing Council. This council is responsible for the granting of licenses to all kinds of air services, not just passenger services. So these are vehicle trackers, wildlife tracking, firefighting from the air, air ambulances, anything that has to do with a service performed in the air, this council has to license. And the Air Services Act makes it clear that these licenses should be granted if certain performance and operational requirements are met. What the Air Services Licensing Council, however, did was to insert into that licensing requirement BEE requirements. So it said, unless you meet some certain BEE obligations, we're going to start constricting the licensing issuance. And we became aware of this at the end of 2023 when some of the air service companies in South Africa approached us. These people are doing excellent work. Now they're being hamstrung by this licensing council, just taking it upon itself to implement BEE without a legislative basis. We then put the Air Services Council on legal terms with our attorney sending them letters. They stayed the course. And so toward the end of 2024, we then initiated litigation. And that litigation then about 6-7 months later resulted in a court victory for us. The Minister of Transport, Baba Creasy, even abided beforehand. She let the court know that she'll abide by the decision. I think that was a sign of the strength of our application. And so that's out of the way now. Air Services in South Africa, once again, the court has ordered exactly as we requested the court to order, that no BEE requirements, no race-based requirements may be made for air services in the country. This was a significant victory. There are similar instances of regulators overstepping their mark in other places. We can get into that. But we consider this to be the first, what we call wave three BEE victory, which is where the state tries to make BEE a requirement for economic participation at all. We are very encouraged by this victory.
But that's flat out racist. And maybe Trump, and many of us who have our doubts about him, I mean, he does good things and bad things, so I suppose you're always going to have different opinions. But maybe he was right when he said that you are driving through race-based policies, that you're racist, and we as Americans cannot have racist policies in our country and we can't endorse them elsewhere. It just sounds flat out racist to me. That they are trying to now only operate if you have these racist policies on your books.
This is a long-standing ANC policy. It's just become more pronounced in recent years. And I think with even the Economist writing op-eds or letters making the case that what makes Mr. Ramaphosa rich is making his country poor is a sign of the times. The policies by the ANC being implemented on BEE and other race-based requirements, you can call them racist or you can call them, by whatever name. What they are, in fact, is targeted domestic sanctions against the white pop people in the country, primarily white males. But then there's clearly a degree of preference within the ANC with black people at the top and white people at the bottom and Indians and colored people somewhere in between. And as it seems, unfortunately, that as time goes on, the ANC's preference in this regard becomes more and more stark, and the willingness of regulators and bureaucrats to exercise this racial preference gets more and more license, more and more of a free hand. So we're in for a tough ride in the next few years, Alec, and that's why we're scaling up our litigation significantly. By the end of this year, we're likely to have more than 10 concurrent court cases. Not all of them will be on race-based or BEE or race-restrictive legislation. They're also on things like the NHI, also on state failure in areas like Ditsobotla and Lichtenberg, but several of them will be on these race-restrictive requirements. And the courts are not going to solve everything in this country, but to the extent that the courts are a proper avenue for remedying unacceptable situations, we will make full use of them. And I must thank our supporters who make all of this possible.
Have you read any of Ayn Rand's books, and in particular Atlas Shrugged?
Yes, I did. It was several years ago, shortly after I was at university. Alec, some of your readers will be and others may not be familiar with the book. It's about the producers withholding their productive contributions to society because they get fed up with bureaucracy. They get fed up with people trying to vote for a living instead of produce for a living. And then in the end, that withdrawal of the productive forces in the economy causes a total collapse. Over the years, I've, Ayn Rand made a striking, was very striking in the way she portrayed this withdrawal of the productive forces, the productive people they withdrawing their support, their contributions from society. And over the years, I've come to view her as a little bit cold, but indeed, we are at risk of people leaving at least South Africa, people at least saying, well, then we'll invest somewhere else. If this government keeps being so feyandig, what's the word, so adversarial.
But it is interesting that when she wrote the book, it was around the time of after the Second World War, and there was quite a lot of socialism or socialist fervor in the United States. And as a consequence of that book and Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead thereafter, and remember, Ayn Rand was the partner of Alan Greenspan, who was the Federal Reserve Governor. They were an item for many years. So you're not talking about somebody who didn't have influence, but it influenced greatly the way that America thought about free enterprise, freedom, capitalism, etc. Here in South Africa, it's almost like you want to force feed those consequences to those who are making decisions on the basis of some outdated ideology that is so destructive and has been destructive time and time again around the world. But I do get the sense, Pitt, I get the sense that South Africans are waking up to this. We've had on the often when I see the research that's done on what people think about BEE, it's kind of the pennies dropped that it's not helping the mass of the population. It's not empowering people. It's just an elite enrichment scheme. And I guess that from where we stand in the media is let's try and get people to open their eyes. From where you stand, would you support something like Cape Independence, where maybe others can look to the to the west or southwest and at some point say, okay, so that works. What we're doing up here by empowering these thieves is not working.
Look, Alex, South Africa is not a very old country. It's just 120, 30-something years since 1910 when it became effectively one country. Before that, it was two republics and two colonies. And before that, it was even more distributed over the years. So this great consolidation into one South Africa was made at some point. And there's no reason that the country cannot be decentralized again, federalized and broken up into different sovereignties or different kinds of overlapping structures of authority. There's certainly no reason to be wed to South Africa, just as one need not be wed to any specific border. What one should keep in mind is that countries exist for the benefit of their polities or for the benefit of their citizens. If we do not see a flourishing of society in a kind of in one state structure, there's no, the state structure itself is not holy. That is not the object of society. So the object of society is to be flourishing, and the state should be the structure of whatever state should be made subject to that ultimate goal. So in principle, Cape Independence is wonderful, but in principle, so are other forms of decentralization, federalization, and so on. I don't want to be too far ahead of the time, to be too premature in saying exactly what a future rearrangement in South Africa looks like. But I think increasingly people are just understanding that something's amiss in this country and in its structure. And something will have to change. And certainly by steering and remaining, steering the course, staying the course and remaining wedded to their outdated ideological positions, the ANC is driving home this new realization. And so in the end, I guess it's to some extent their own, it'll be their own, what's the word? it'll be the ANC is busy with its own undoing if it keeps keeps doing what it's currently doing.
But it's quite extraordinary, really, if you work it out. The percentage of people who vote is just over 50%. And of those, just over 40% vote for the ANC, just under 40% vote for the ANC. So you're talking about 20% of the voting public who then give the power to a group of, tell it like it is, 100 people in the National Executive Committee, many of whom are not that well educated, as we see time and time again. And those 100 not well educated people are actually making decisions on behalf of 60 million. And at some point in time, maybe that penny has to drop. But just a final point. Tsaka Lecha means, for those in the US who are watching this or from other parts of the world, and there are many who do, it means business league. In other words, it's a business chamber with an Afrikaans name. These people that we spoke about earlier in the Ayn Rand book that were led by John Galt, the producers, the entrepreneurs, the innovators, the scientists, who all went off in this fictional model and went off and did their own thing. In a way, they were state-proofing themselves, which is a little bit like what the flag that you are waving.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with the word state-proofing. Maybe one day we'll be able to. Well, if ever in the future people think of Tsaka Lecha as the home of state-proofing and an important a new direction that the country took, we'll be very proud of that. But for now, we're just happy to have introduced the word in the vocabulary. Like I've said before on this show, that the challenge in South Africa is not to try and change the government. The problem is to try and change the role of the state in society. And we can't do that for the whole world. We must do that where we have resources and support and where we understand the situation. That is South Africa. And so certainly our view of what successful reform in South Africa entails, from our side, our contribution will be to coordinate businesses, to change the role of the state in society. The state has grown enormously powerful. It has grown to an influence that is not conducive to human flourishing. And the proper remedy for that is to get the state back in its place, whatever that place is and whatever it evolves to, and make other sections of society, including business, stronger. And that is what what weights and counterweights in a society look like. It's not, the state cannot balance itself from within. We must balance the state from outside.
Pieter Roux is the Chief Executive of Tsaka Lecha. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.